Look out, get down. The Dark Town Strutters are riding the town. Super Sisters on cycles. After they arrive in a bad man left alive. They're fast as a jet, sharp as Gillette. And what you see is what you get. Dark Town Strutters. See the Dramatics, Roger E. Mosley, and Miss Black America Shirley Washington in Dark Town Strutters. Better move your butt when these ladies strut. Five Foxes Zoo hit like a truckload of... Gotta watch your act on the radio. Singing, dancing, strutting. It's a real black comedy. Dark Town Strutters. They're super fine mothers. Soaring into Soul City, they can run you down and still look pretty. Dark Town Strutters is rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Strut to see it.
Get back, Jack, and welcome to another funktastic episode of The Projection Booth. I'm Mike White, and with me, as always, is my homie, Mondo Justin.
Hey, everybody. Hey, I just rode my trike into the studio today, so forgive me, I'm picking the bugs out of my teeth for a minute.
Hey, take your time. This week, we're discussing the fabulous flick Dark Town Strutters, also known as Get Down and Boogie. This 1975 flick is a true life adventure, and any similarity between it and the story of Cinderella is bullshit.
I didn't know that.
This flick is a wild ride. It's a black action comedy like no other. It stars the delicious Trina Parks as Serena, the leader of an all-girl motorcycle gang. She's looking for her mama, Cinderella. During her search, she'll run into another biker gang, fend off some bumbling racist cops, and take on a vast right-wing conspiracy involving genetic manipulation and fried chicken. Justin, what are your thoughts on Dark Town Strutters?
What do you want me to say? I mean, for me, this movie's all about Trina Parks. Just gorgeous. And the bikes in the film are fabulous. The costumes in the film are fabulous. It is just such a crazy movie that, frankly, I've seen it a few times now, and I still can't make heads or tails of the film in general, with the exception of your synopsis. You know, on that note, I'm going to say that I am a fan of the film on a certain level, but it's not something that I can watch weekly. It's something I could watch every couple of years, but it is hilarious, super interesting, and some of my favorite parts are the musical sections.
I guess I'm more of a fan. I could watch this one any day of the week, but it's very interesting. It's definitely very cartoonish. I think it's very fitting that we're talking about this so close to when we talked about Forbidden Zone, because there is quite an overlap as far as the way that this is kind of a living cartoon. And I'd say it's kind of a living, silly symphony if I had to pick a cartoon. Not necessarily the Max Fleischer stuff, but more a couple of years later on. But yeah, it's got the musical sections. It's got some very cartoony sound effects. Without further ado, let's go ahead and just jump right into a little discussion here about the movie. It was directed by a guy named William Whitney, who I wouldn't think would be directing this film, because his past work was all like westerns and stuff. And looking at it, it's like, whoa, where did this one come from in his filmography? It wasn't like he was out there directing, you know, Superfly or any of the other blaxploitation films. It's just like, okay. I mean, it makes sense. The writer of the film was George Armitage, who went on to do things like Miami Blues and Gross Point Blank. But before that, he had done a whole lot of work with Roger Corman in AIP, and he had done some dirty nurse movies, you know, like Private Duty Nurses, those kind of things. And his most famous film, other than Miami Blues, is one called Gas, which is this kind of counterculture comedy. And I almost want to put comedy in quotes because it's really freaking goofy. Have you had a chance to see that one?
Gas? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then also, back to the director, have you ever seen Ice Skate from Devil's Island with Billy Dee Williams?
I did not see that one.
It's a hard one to track down, but it's worth it.
Gas is on a DVD double feature with Wild in the Streets, which is kind of appropriate, but I would say Wild in the Streets would be a better double feature with, like, Privilege. Gas is, it's got an amazing cast, and it's basically, well, kind of one of these, like, I think there's a gas that's released that kills anybody that's over 30 or something. One of those, don't trust anybody over 30, so let's just kill them all. But I believe it was mistakenly released, and then it's kind of the rest of society picking up. And I just remember, like, Cindy Williams is in it, and there's a whole bunch of, you look through that movie and you're like, oh, wow, I didn't know this person was in it. I didn't know this person was in it, so...
I think appropriately you should, I'm going to call you out and ask you to pronounce the film in its proper title.
Gas.
Right there, perfect.
All right.
That was where it ended.
Kind of like Sweet Sweetback's badass song. And the cast of this film is absolutely amazing. You talked about Trina Parks and just how awesome she is in it. The other folks that are in there, there's this other biker gang, this male biker gang, and like everybody that's in it is somebody. It's led by Roger E. Mosley, best known around these parts anyway, as being from Magnum P.I.
My favorite helicopter pilot.
Yes, exactly. But for me, he will always be known as Goldie's brother from the Mac. His speech in that about not going back to Africa is probably one of my highlights of cinema of all time.
This system was not originally designed with black people in mind.
Right on, brother. Right on. Right on.
And it definitely was not prepared for black people to, in the end, begin to demand their rights and an equal share in this country, which they've died for.
I know.
Hey, and we definitely are not going back to Africa. For us to exist in the system, we must first of all realize we've got to form our own black America within, but without white America.
Stan Shaw is in it. Stan Shaw has been in just a whole mess of stuff. Of course, he was in Runaway with Tom Selleck. He was also the boxer in Snake Eyes. Tyler, you know, go Tyler, go Tyler.
Go Tyler, go Tyler, go Tyler, go! Go Tyler, go Tyler!
Let me just interrupt. You're leaving out his brilliant performance in Fried Green Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, my bad. And I think I want to say he was in Sounder as well, but I'm not 100% on that one. So I might have to cut myself out of that. And also Christopher Joy plays a guy named Wired, which is very appropriate. Actually, all of these guys in the male biker gang are basically playing characteristics like Roger E. Mosley's mellow, Stan Shaw's raunchy. There's Otis Day, yes, the Otis Day from Animal House, as VD, and basically he's just playing a venereal disease, a walking, talking one. He goes by the name Dwayne Jesse in this film. And yeah, Christopher Joy, one of my faves. He was in one called Big Time, which co-stars Tobar Mayo, and Trina Parks was also in a film with Tobar Mayo. So we'll talk more about that later on. I'm still trying to find that movie. It's called The Big Ripoff. So hopefully one of these days that thing will turn up. And then Dick Miller, of course. You can't have anything produced by a Corman without having Dick Miller in it. And this film was produced by Roger's brother, Gene. I know that you're a fan of Gene Corman's work.
I don't know if I'd call myself a fan. I think I'll refer to how you referred to Walter Hill many episodes ago and say I was an aficionado of Gene Corman. And it's just important to note that Gene produced, a film we covered a few weeks back, Sam Fuller's The Big Red One.
This was also designed by Jack Fisk, who is the husband of Sissy Spacek, who was, for me, best known as the production designer on Eraserhead, but he was production designing just a whole hell of a lot of stuff back in the day. So the production design is very important in this, especially the cop car and their amazing siren that they have on the cop car, this huge bubble light that they have that just kind of flashes on and off with this amazing sound effect that goes along with it, too.
That whole thing is an extreme caricature as well, which I think ties into the cartoon aspect. Exactly. You know, that's what I think I love about this movie. So, I am a fan of it, but I'm not a crazy fan like you are in terms of, you know, my love of the film. But I think that is one of the standout elements that I really appreciate is the cartoon aspect. You know, there's the siren, the bikes, there's the sound effects, the costumes, just the slapstick humor. You know, it's almost like the black exploitation version of the Keystone Cops with bikers and chicks and fried chicken.
Strut your ass out of my saddle, grunt.
Sorry, long and leggy, but the Marines have landed.
Run the next to the rescue!
Wait for me!
Me too!
And then think I voted for Stool Blessing!
The there's nothing I would like more of than chicken made by an albino. But why wasn't it called Whitey's chicken? Because that would have been a real interesting parable on the whole race thing.
They take on race pretty much right between the eyes in this film. There's no stepping around with this topic in here. The whole thing really hinges on a conspiracy of this guy who runs a chicken shop, which is very similar to, I would say, a little bit similar to Kentucky Fried Chicken. I don't know. I don't want to get sued or anything, but I would say that there's maybe some parallels between this old white guy with this goatee and stuff running this hog heaven kind of place compared to Colonel Sanders. But
you're not being paid to say that. This is not a product placement by KFC, and I wouldn't recommend you to get the wrap there because it's fabulous.
Right, exactly. Or the Double Down, which is
equally fabulous.
Oh, yes. What is it, like 5,000 calories or something?
Of deliciousness.
Yes. Could feed an entire family in Africa for a week with one of these sandwiches. Or you could have it as a late night snack.
Also, before we get too deep here, I feel like you failed to mention one of my favorite aspects of the film also, which is the appearance of the Dramatics. Because I'm a huge Stax fan, and Dramatics were a pretty big part of the Stax record label in the 70s.
Yeah, and this Dramatics, very unexpected appearance by the Dramatics. Like I was saying at the beginning, it's very much a quest kind of film where we've got Cyrena, and she's got a few girls in her gang who are just absolutely wonderful looking. I was looking at some of their filmographies, and a couple of the girls were only in this film, it looks like. So I don't know what happened, why they didn't go on to bigger and better things, because they definitely had bigger and better things going on in their pants. But yeah, so it's her going around and trying to find out information about her mother, Cinderella, and eventually it leads to this kind of Colonel Sander-ish character who lives on this big plantation and has all these black servants, and it ends up being that there's all these prominent black leaders are being kidnapped in the community, including Cinderella, who is an abortionist, or is at least helping girls get abortions, which just seems like a pretty heavy topic. I mean, this is made in, what, 74? And, I mean, Roe v. Wade was just like 2 years prior to this. So, I mean, it's, not something that you necessarily speak about in mixed company, much less in a movie at this time. So,
yeah, it's so weird. This movie is just so weird. And normally I love weird movies. I do appreciate this movie on a lot of levels, actually. It's definitely a product of its time, you know. And I don't know why we're not referring to Cinderella and this as Solarella.
Yeah, you know, they had so many different, you know, Blackenstein, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Black, all those kind of things. So Solarella, I guess maybe because people would think that it was like, if you spelled that out, it would look like solder, like when you use that little metal stuff. I don't know.
Solder, right. Solderella?
Solderella.
Solderella!
You could write it in the silver metal, you know. Sorry.
God, it's such a weird movie. I don't even know. Like, I can't. It's such an anomaly. You know, I can't even understand. I would love to talk to the guy who wrote this. You know, I think sadly he's passed, but I would die to know the inspiration behind this story and, you know, why they thought this might be some sort of successful film. That, because I can tell you right now, I guarantee it was released in the theaters for a regional audience or a targeted audience. So I'd really like to know. Why?
No, actually, George Armitage is still around. I've been trying to find this guy and
I forgot.
He hasn't made anything in a couple of years. The last thing he made was with Owen Wilson. I can't remember the name of it. It was like Big Beach Bum or something like that. The Big Bounce. It was an Elmore Leonard book that it was based on, and it had an amazing cast. Like I said, Owen Wilson, who I'm not a fan of, but Charlie Sheen, Vinnie Jones, Morgan Freeman, Willie Nelson was in this film, Gary Sinise, B. Arthur. No, I'm just kidding.
Really?
No. In a bikini.
Wearing a football helmet full of cottage cheese.
Maybe that's why it didn't do that well at the box office. But that was 2004 that he made that and hasn't, as far as I know, made anything else.
I hear he's making Gross Point Blank 2.
That would be interesting. Were you a fan of Gross Point Blank?
Yeah, actually I was.
I'm not sure if I was or not. And yeah, I tried to reach out to him at his agency, and the guy working the phone was like, "We don't handle that, gentlemen." And it's like, I think you do. Can you check? And he came back a few minutes later. He's like, oh, yeah, we do. But we don't really see him very often. Okay, well, can you let him know I'm looking for him? But haven't heard anything back in quite a few weeks. So, because I'd love to talk to him about Miami Blues as well, which is one of my favorite films. So, yeah, it would be very interesting to find out how the hell this thing came about, because it is just, I hate to say it's like nothing you've ever seen before, because it's such
but it kind of is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's such a tired statement, but yeah, it's just, it's out there, man. I can't really think, other than cartoons, I can't really think of anything that you could really compare this film to. Oh, I was going to say before we get off track, I was going to say about the way that the dramatics are in this film, which is Sirena looking for all these black leaders and looking for her mama, and she finds everybody in cages at this plantation, and the dramatics are there. And they're just kind of hanging out in a cell, and they do an entire musical number.
One of my favorite parts, actually.
It's just so strange. And then, you know, Trina Parks is outside of their jail cell, just kind of, you know, boogieing along and stuff while they're doing What You See Is What You Get. And it's just like, yeah, this is pretty cool, you know. And that's, it's just such a weird musical break in the film. But
there are a couple of them.
It's par for the course as far as weird things.
There are a few breaks in the story throughout the movie. I think one of my favorite parts is, because, you know, I am fairly attracted to Trina Parks, I realized. And I was really jealous of Roger Mosley got to take her to the bedroom for the explosion.
I've been very jealous of Roger Mosley pretty much through his entire career, especially when he gets to hang out, you know, with Tom Selleck on Hawaii.
And Higgins.
Yeah. Anybody that gets to hang out with Higgins is, you know, I'm very jealous of them. How about other films that are anywhere similar to this? I know that you had mentioned earlier in this week that maybe comparisons to Melvin Van Peebles. I mean, I'm thinking like, you know, because Watermelon Man was very strange as well. But I would say it's much more heavy-handed in the way that it treats race.
Well, I think, you know, and I mentioned that, I think how it compares is the fact that Darktown Strutters is this movie, you know, that is sort of blaxploitation unconventional in the sense that it's not a story about a drug dealer or a pusher. It's an outside-the-box movie, you know. It's almost like a musical. I really appreciate it about it. And then in terms of Velvet Peoples, you know, you've got him as a filmmaker who kind of set out to make untraditional blaxploitation movies. I mean, I don't really want to call them blaxploitation movies. Surely he didn't say, I'm going to make some blaxploitation movie. He just made interesting black stories, you know, on film. And so, like, you think of Sweet Sweetback, you think of Watermelon Man, Don't Play Us Cheap. And then also on that same, you know, line, you've got Downey Sr. who did Putney Swope, you know, Graydon Clark's The Bad Bunch. There's that great interracial love story. I can't remember the name of the guy who directed it now. Really early on in the 70s, which would have just shook a lot of things, I think, called Honky. And then, of course, one you're forgetting, a very unconventional blaxploitation film, Mario's Solo.
I don't know how many times you've talked to me about Solo, but we're going to have to cover that one of these days in this show. Do you think we'll be able to have Mario Van Peebles on this show?
I mean, I would try. I think I could probably get him.
Because if we do, I would love to talk to him about Highlander 3 as well.
There's a lot of things I'd like to talk to him about. Like, I'd like to talk about Posse.
Oh, yeah, of course, Posse.
Motisa? What? The Motisa tribe.
I think the only thing that I could possibly even start to compare this one with is Bamboozled by Spike Lee. But I don't think that Spike Lee could even be as outrageous as this film. I would be very curious to get his take on Darktown Strutters.
There's no way he could make this movie. I'll tell you why. Because Spike Lee is a New York filmmaker, and you don't see these types of movies coming out of New York. This is a very California idea.
And I also say that this is a good movie, and Spike Lee really, to me, hasn't made a good movie
since The 25th Hour.
I'm thinking ever. So
don't talk bad about Girl 6, dude.
Oh, I was not a fan of Girl 6 at all, man. I even saw that one in the theater. I saw that one. I saw Summer of Sam.
I like that one, actually.
I saw Clockers.
I like that.
Oh, no, I'm not a fan of any of these films.
I really like The 25th Hour, actually. Just because
right
it's
thing.
25th Hour was kind of him leaving the I Hate Whitey arena, kind of.
25th Hour, was that the one with
Edward Norton?
Ed Norton.
And
okay.
Barry Pepper, yeah.
All right.
Rosario Dawson.
Okay, I will say that I did like The Inside Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Spike would ever begin to make a movie like this. But yeah, you're right. This is very much a California film.
Yeah, because even if, you know, if you look at just like we just covered it, Forbidden Zone, you know, a very California idea. And all these movies were you know, we're talking about, you know, a bad bunch. It's a very California idea. You don't see these kind of movies coming out of New York. They're very, very serious in New York. California is much more breezy and more daring.
Sleazy.
Right.
Well, I'm trying to remember where Melvin Van Peebles was based out of.
He was based in New York.
Okay. Oh, my bad.
I think so. I'm pretty sure. Well, no, that's not true because they made – that's not true at all because he was in L.A. They shot Sweetback in L.A.
Okay.
So that was definitely an L.A. kind of movie. You forgot to mention the cinematographer, by the way.
Can you begin to pronounce his name? Because I have problems with these kind of Brazilian names.
Well, I've always just called him Jay Fernandez.
Ah, very nice.
If you do a literal translation, I think it would be Joao Fernandez. Or you can call him Donnie Wahlberg.
So Donnie Wahlberg, the cinematographer of Dark Town Strutters, also did, again, another movie that we've talked about on the show. I guess this is the episode where everything finally starts to come together. So if you've listened to all of the other episodes of The Projection Booth, everything finally is starting to meld, just pointing to Dark Town Strutters in this film. So.
This is the ultimate 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon episode.
This is the Rosetta Stone of... of the projection booth.
Isn't that where you learn to speak Chinese?
No, this is the nexus. This is where Malcolm McDowell has been trying to get back to for years and years, and he's going to hijack the Enterprise D just to screw up and move this planet and destroy all this stuff just so he can get to listen to this episode of the projection booth. João Fernandes was the cinematographer of one of your favorite films, Red Scorpion. And then he also was the cinematographer on Deep Throat, Invasion USA, Missing in Action. You said all of the Doris Wishman films also.
Yep, all the late 70s Wishman movies, like Amazing Transplant, Let Me Die a Woman. Plus he shot Devil and Mrs. Jones for Damiano too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, one of these days we're going to have to talk about that one. I'm debating about that one or Behind the Green Door as far as...
Well, you can do that. One of my plans for after the new year was I wanted to do Andy Warhol's Blue Movie and cover. I wanted to do some of the sections of my Viva interview, but I was interested in talking about pornography as art at that point, and then we could talk about Deep Throat and stuff like that because there's no way we're going to get anyone from that movie. They're all dead, and Harry Reams called me a f***er when I called him. So
nice.
He said, "F*** you," when he hung up on me. I was like, "What?" Oh yeah, I have his phone number. Yeah, I called him, and he's like, "I haven't given a f*** interview in 20 f***ing years." I was like, "Well, I mean, last time I checked, Inside Deep Throat came out like 6 years ago." So yeah, he's like a crazy like reformed Christian.
Oh, very nice. Chuck
Trainers is dead. Chuck Trainer's dead. So I don't know what we could possibly get for those movies. We could try to track down Linda Lovelace's daughter, Lacey Lovelace.
Sounds like we've got some good pornography coming up on the show then pretty soon. So yay, nice and racy. So I had the pleasure of speaking to Trina Parks about Dark Town Strutters. Let's go ahead and we'll roll that interview. So I was wondering if you could give me a little background on that.
Well, I had done Diamonds Are Forever already, and it was actually through my agent, Agency for the Performing Arts, that I was one of the clients. Actually, it was myself and Pam Grier were the two female African Americans in the agency at that time. And Pam was, she was there before me, and then I joined the agency. You know, they would have me in different areas because I did, why they really wanted me in there was because I, you know, I was not just an actress. I did also dance and choreographed and sang and I did several things. So they were able to give me to different agents here in California and in New York that could book me in several different venues. So this movie came, it called for different characters to do different characters and also, you know, be able to move a little bit. That's how it was cast. They, at that time, too, they would call the agencies and ask for the actor actresses that they wanted to see for different films. Then they would call you and ask you, the agent would call you and ask you, would you like to speak to the producer or director or casting director about this film? So that was how I did it.
So what did you think when you found out what the project was? Because it's just so off the wall.
It was. And that's what I felt when I saw it. I said, this is really crazy. But my part, of course, was told to be, you know, the straight gal in the movie. And I said, you know, it was interesting to do because one of the things is that it came out the same time that Blazing Saddle was released. And I believe it was at some of the same theaters because it did open nationwide. I went on tour for that film. United States tour. It opened in all big cities, Detroit, Philly, New York. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird that it's not out on DVD yet. Do you think it's maybe like the, you know, because it kind of straddles that line where it could be offensive or not.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But you can't take it that way. Some of it I didn't know till I actually did the film on some of the things that was said in the film, you know, concerning blacks and all, and what was done. Some of those things I wasn't too happy about. Couldn't change them, but, you know, at least at the end we took over. We won. We took them out of business. The only downside of the project I didn't really agree with was one of the characters, and that was the nun character. So we kind of talked about that a little bit and changed it a little bit. Some of the things.
I also find this movie so progressive in the whole abortion theme that's going on in there. Did you have any problems with that?
No, that I didn't, really. That was actually the least of anything that I had questioned and was talked about a little bit, you know, as far as the things that I didn't want to be involved with.
Right.
Of course, I wasn't a producer, and so, you know, I mean, I was an actor. What I could talk about and what I could express, you know, I did as far as what I was concerned with. What around me and what was done, scenes that I didn't even know about, I could not say anything, really. As an actor, if you have, you are a part of, you know, producer of it, have money in the film, of course you can.
Right.
Otherwise, you can just kind of talk about what your role is. And
when you look back on it, I mean, do you have any regrets about the movie overall?
No.
I mean, you sound a little hesitant.
Oh, no.
Talking about it. Okay.
No, I don't have any regrets. Yes, I can kind of understand some of the, you know, what some people would have, or actors would have, if they, some things that are put in the movie that you have no idea is going to be in there until it's shown. You're not happy with that situation because you're part of it. I did mention there's some things that I didn't like, but I'm not, I don't regret that I did it. It wasn't, you know, like it ruined my career. Or I'm, you know, ashamed of what I never do anything I'm ashamed of. And that's one thing. And I absolutely never in my life have I done anything I'm ashamed of or regret anything I've done, theater-wise or, you know, television or motion picture-wise.
To me, it pushes the envelope. I mean, there are some things in there where you're just like, I don't really know how to feel about this right now. But then again, I'm watching it 20-plus mm-hmm. years later, so
yeah.
I don't know how it really played at the time.
You know, I mean, it was a little offensive when I first saw it. Like I said, I felt that it could be that I didn't particularly like. Was like one of the parts was the minstrel with the black face. I didn't like that. I just don't like that, period. You know, I didn't know that was going to be in there. I think there was something that was said, and I wasn't in that scene, but I was part of the scene. In the police station, they were doing the map, looking for, I forgot now what exactly they were looking for, but it was, they had errors that they were pointing out. I think that they have taken it out when they play it, you know, on television now. And I believe they said nigger alert. I'm not sure, but I think they did. And it may not be in the film now, but when I originally saw it, it was in there. But see, that word was used very openly at that time, too. Actually, it was played on TCM some months ago, late at night.
Right, yeah.
Played, and I heard about it and didn't even know it was until after the fact that it was played. Yeah, there was some really kind of great comments about it. Where's this film been? And I had fun doing it. I had many friends in the film, you know, other actors that I had met, or just met, or in fact, my co-star, Roger Mosley, I had pretty much just met him. And I know his girlfriend was a good friend of mine. But anyway, it was a new friendship. But we just got along so well. You know, we had a real good time. And until today, we are still good friends.
Well, yeah, it seems like you guys are just having a hoot on screen.
Oh, yeah. It was a crazy film. My sidekick, Shirley Washington, is then we both joined the organization Kwanzaa together. You know, of course, now we best of friends still. And I just saw her a couple of weeks ago in Las Vegas when we went to see Mary Wilson, who also was a Kwanzaa member of some years after us. So it was like a real family reunion.
What was the atmosphere like on set? I mean, was it as wild off the camera as it was on?
Yeah, pretty much, because we were all just having fun, because that's, you know, what the director said, to have fun with it, you know. And like I said, I was the straight guy, but a little campy, but it was campy too. So you had nothing but fun to have with that, you know, the whole piece.
I was going to ask about the motorcycles. Did you have any kind of training for that?
I did. I had to train, I would say, almost a week or so for the big motorcycle. mine, that the big one, you know, I rode mostly. You know, the smaller one, I only had to ride it basically maybe half a block or something like that. It was one I had to ride it just to a gate, because most of all of that, you know, the heavy riding on that motorcycle was done with the second unit, with the stuntman. But the other one, I had to drive a little bit more, at least know how to drive it, which I had never, you know, driven anything like that before. But it was fun after I was taught, you know. Again, I didn't have to drive it, like, down the street like you see. You know, it's not me. And some of the sections, they are pulling me with the camera in front of me, you know, and the truck pulling the motorcycle.
I should ask you about your outfit, too. I mean, those clothes.
Gosh, I was doing European and Asian tour. It was around the 80s. And I had put a lot of things in my storage, and I was going to move to another place when I, you know, returned. I came back, everything was gone. I hate even talking about it because it's just hurt so badly. You know, pictures, and I had this big kimono that I'd gotten when I first went to Tokyo in 82, I think it was. Just gorgeous. I had it on my wall in the living room there on the big walls. And, oh, my gosh. It was gone. That was more of the main thing. Some of my, you know, a lot of pictures, my daughter and back, and, you know, some of the things that she made in school. Oh, it was just terrible. Just terrible. That was one of the other was one of the outfits that also was taken. The leather outfit was stolen on the set with the hat, my gold wing hat, helmet. Yeah, because I wanted to keep that. I was able to keep the yellow, the two-piece for some time, and then that was, you know, I said in my storage. I think they gave me the jeans and the hat. I had that for a while. I don't wear jeans. I have never really been a what we used to call dungarees back in the day. I'm not a jean wearer. So I wore them sometime, but I think I gave those away. And what was the other? Well, that was actually the only other one. I wouldn't wear the cop outfit all the time. And the white dress, I think they gave me that too. There was nowhere for me to wear that. But I think those are the only outfits, yeah, that I would even wear anywhere.
Ahoy, mateys. This is KAB, Antonio Bay. Stevie Wayne here, beaming a signal across the sea. I'll be here playing music all through the witching hour. I'm still waiting to hear from that weatherman. But in the meantime, stay here with me. Be sure to visit our sponsor, Paracinema Magazine. They're the source for all your genre movie needs. Check them out online at paracinema.net. Tell them Stevie sent you. Keep me turned on for a while, and I'll do my best to do the same for you.
The smooth sound. Fabulous 1340. KAB.
GGTMC. Live. For you, fresh air. Big Willie and the Samurai are at your service, breaking films down and turning them around, giving recommendations that are always on point. Visit ggtmc.com for more information. The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to the trash since 1977.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobar Mayo, the Black Superman, and I'm in the projection booth with Mike and Justin.
I'll be down to get you in a taxi, honey. Well, you better be ready around a 6:30. Baby, don't you be late. I want to be there when the band starts, honey. Just remember when we get there, honey. Two steps, gonna have of them all. Dance of both of my shoes when they play the general blues. Come out at night at a dark time, strutted ball. I'll be down to get you in a taxi, honey. Well, the better be ready around 6:30. Now, baby, well, don't you be late. I want to be there when the band starts, honey. Well, just remember when we get there, honey. Two steps, wanna have them all. Dance off of both of my shoes. Well, when they play the Telly Road Blues, tomorrow night at the Darktown Strutters Bar.
And we're back. That was a little taste of the Darktown Strutters Ball, a song written by fellow Detroiter Shelton Brooks. Little known fact, Shelton Brooks also wrote the song Some of These Days, which was featured in Richard Elfman's The Forbidden Zone, which we covered 2 weeks ago on the show. Again, the Nexus episode of The Projection Booth. I found there's a nice little bio about Brooks on allmusic.com written by the one and only Professor Arwolf Arwolf. Thank you, Wolfie. So I'm glad that Trina Parks was pretty open about talking about Darktown Strutters. You can hear a little hesitation in her voice when I mention that that's the movie I want to talk to her about. I can't or won't tell you how many times I've tried to talk to an actor, director, etc., who's disavowed some of their work. I mean, when I spoke to Tanya Boyd, I specifically left any discussion of Black Shampoo until the end of the interview. And as soon as I mentioned it, she completely clammed up. It was like, interview over. I mean, I could have brought up like Ilsa, harem keeper of the oil sheiks, where she's like totally nude throughout the entire film. But just, have you ever run into that before?
Yes, I have. And it's funny that you mentioned Ilsa, because when I interviewed Diane Thorne, Ilsa herself, you know, we had this great conversation. We talked for a couple hours over a couple days and really thorough in terms of when I do interviews. And we, you know, she was completely open about talking about all the Ilsa films, had nothing to hide. But then when I discussed some of her earlier films she did in New York under a fake name, she did a lot of these like softcore black and white lesbian movies with Joseph Sarno. And she totally clammed right up, refused to talk about them. You could hear in her voice a tone change. Like, she was very uncomfortable doing that, you know, and she did. Only thing she would open up to me about was the fact is that her family wasn't very proud of those movies. End of discussion.
I'm trying to think of who else I might have talked to. I mean, there are some people where it's just like, why do you want to talk to me about that movie? But they're usually more laughing when they say it. I mean, I think you had an experience with Robert Davi when you talked to him about Tracks, where he was just like, why do you want to talk to me about this movie? I definitely try to go for the more obscure stuff. I'm not sure if you have tried to talk to actors where they're just like, what? But, you know, I talked to Alfred Soul a few weeks ago, and I'll be talking to him more about Pandemonium. And right before the end of the conversation, he's like, why of all of things do you want to talk about Pandemonium?
Right. Yeah, no, I don't think so. I cover everything. And, I've run into surprising commentary. Like, one of my favorite movies is this movie called Naked Obsession. That was directed by Dan Gold. We covered Strip Teaser by him earlier this year. And I talked to William Catt, who's the star of Naked Obsession. He was basically sad that we were talking about it. Like, he was disappointed with it. He didn't like the nudity in it. I said, yeah, you know, there's a film festival coming up and they're going to show Naked Obsession. He said, I'm sorry. So, I mean, I was like, whatever, that's fine. Like, it's a brilliant film noir, but that's, if you don't like it, you don't like it. So, not a big deal.
Talking about Tobar Mayo earlier, I was very happy that he was having no problems talking about
the mislaid genie.
Though he seemed to be very surprised that we knew that he was in it. This internet thing seems to be kind of, you know, surprising. Tobar and Trina were in The Big Ripoff, this TV pilot with Tony Curtis that really kind of never went anywhere. Still looking for a copy of that. If any of our listeners know where I can get a copy, that would be great. But I had mentioned that we had talked to Tobar, to Trina, and she was just so excited. Asked me if I had his phone number, hooked her up. And then I got a voicemail a couple weeks ago where she was saying like that they went out and they saw some jazz concert or something together, and it was great speaking to him again. So, you know, bringing people together, that's what this podcast is really all about.
If you get nothing else from it, it's the fact that we brought two semi-icons of blaxploitation cinema back together again.
Exactly. Can you imagine if Sirena and Abar, the first Black Superman, made a movie together, what that would be like?
Well, I'm just wondering if they went to the jazz concert on the trike motorcycle from Darktown Strutters.
That would be awesome.
And if Tobar got out, he popped a wheelie, woo, like, I'd be like, yes!
Yeah, because Tobar's machine in Abar, the First Black Superman, very similar. You know, you got that three-wheeled trike thing going on.
Yeah, and that ties into, which, you know, there's got to be some anomaly there, too, in these black biker movies, which I only can think of. I tried to rack my brain about this, and I could only think of two. I could think of Darktown Strutters, The Black Six, and then Abar.
Oh, yeah.
Abar, and that's not really a biker film, but, I mean, bikes are featured prominently in the film. So how's that?
The Black Six, directed by Matt Simber, director of Candy Tangerine Man. Again, it's all coming together in this episode.
Kevin Bacon, where are you?
Now, if only Kevin Bacon were in Darktown Strutters. Maybe he was. And there definitely was, well, there was definitely some hog going on in there.
That was his cousin, actually.
Oh, really?
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon? Okay. Kevin Fagan, who used to lead all the kids in the alleyways and have them steal from other people. Yes. Darktown Strutters, not out on DVD, unfortunately. Again, my knack for picking films that aren't out on DVD. This did play on TCM's Underground. I believe it was last year. I could be wrong about that. I have a hard time keeping up on TCM Underground's schedule, and I can never really understand when I go to their website whether I'm looking at things in the future or things in the past. I don't know why they can't really necessarily put years on stuff, but I was very surprised that they played that. They did play it under the Get Down and Boogie name. I don't know if Darktown Strutters has some sort of, you know, taboo thing or not. I never knew about that song, Darktown Strutters Ball, until I was starting to do research on this piece. I couldn't believe that it's basically, it's a standard, and it was covered by, like, I don't know, 100 different people. You know, the Platters, Dean Martin, all these different folks. Arthur Fiedler did a version of it. It's like this standard song called Darktown Strutters Balls.
I think Yoko Ono covered it, too, once.
Oh, really? That's how it sounded.
At the Darktown Strutters Ball. Darktown Strutters is a better title than Get Down Boogie anyways.
It definitely is. It really speaks more to what's happening, because there's a little bit of boogieing going on in this film, but not a whole lot. And they don't really necessarily get down too often.
Only about every 26 minutes they get down for about 30 seconds. And I think it's important to note that Darktown Strutters is also the name of the biker gang. The Strutters of Darktown is what they say. What right. It says on the back of their jacket, which I don't know. What do you think? What section of L.A. is nicknamed Darktown? Watts, maybe? It might be Watts.
Maybe. I'm so unfamiliar with L.A. I would not know. I would say Crenshaw. Just, I don't know. Just because I like saying Crenshaw, because it makes me feel like I'm iced tea or something.
Makes so. You feel like you're in Boys of the Hood?
Yes, exactly. Actually, it makes me feel more like I'm Ice Cube than iced tea. So.
Or Ice Tray.
Or, yes, exactly.
Ice or, Pack.
Not Vanilla Ice, though, but hopefully we will cover Cool as Ice at some point in the future here. As soon as we can get Michael Gross to contact us. So.
Is he still alive?
I believe so. Maybe he's making a movie with George Armitage.
How much is this?
That's $2.
Oh. And this?
That one is $2.95.
How much for this item?
That ain't no item, missus. That's an electric can opener.
How authentic.
Never thought it was much to look at.
Where do you get these?
I buy them from folks.
And where do they get them?
They steal them from you folks.
And
I sell them back to you folks. Like the world just keeps going round and round.
I think that is detestable. You ought to be reported.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the poster art for Darktown Strutters. I know you had something to say about that.
Roger Corman was very, very notorious for reusing things. You know, he's done that over the years with films, recycles scripts. You know, he'll remake his own movies. So it's no, you know, shouldn't be to any surprise that he would take a poster art of something and, you know, Photoshop it, even though they probably didn't have Photoshop back then, obviously. But he would take it and alter it for his next project. So, you know, with Darktown Strutters, if you're familiar with the poster, all he did was take the poster art from TNT Jackson, and he just drew in a motorcycle with a girl on it into the side and changed the logo.
Nice. We'll have to do some sort of side-by-side comparison on the website or something so folks can see. Maybe a totally looks-like kind of thing. So I'm trying to think of other black bike movies as well. And, you know, it's weird. Like, biker movies, after a while, they got so rote that they were doing, you know, like Pink Angels, the gay biker movie, or
Werewolves on Wheels.
I was totally just going to say Werewolves on Wheels, you know, just all those kind of knockoffs. But you would think that they would have more black biker movies. I mean, it's because you get two threats to standard white America right there. You know, I guess it was scarier having girls on bikes, like She Devils on Wheels kind of stuff, than it was to have black people on bikes, or like crazed Vietnam veterans like the Losers or something. But I don't know. I would think that there should have been more black biker movies.
Or even more frightening, even Dwarfs Started Small.
Oh, yeah. They put a lot of different things, a lot of different people on bikes back in the day. And then there were, that was more dwarves with Tiptoes by Matthew Bright, you know, and Gary Oldman on a bike. And that was another trike movie, too. So Gary Oldman on a trike really is very, very scary. All right, we're going to take a break for a moment. And when we come back, we will talk a little bit more about Darktown Strutters.
The Ambersons, literature's most fascinating family, brought to the screen by the magic of Orson Welles. Richard Bennett plays old Major Amberson, tyrannical head of a family that had all the rights of royalty and none of its responsibilities. Dolores Costello returns to the screen with a magnificent portrayal of Isabel, the Major's daughter, who left the man she loved to wed another who was more acceptable. From Citizen Kane, you will remember Agnes Moorehead, who plays thin, spinsterish Aunt Fanny, a lonely woman in a house of wealth. No one would guess that Fanny had a secret love. Ray Collins is Uncle Jack, the black sheep of the Andersons. And Joseph Cotton, who plays Eugene Morgan, the man who came out of the past to find his first love once again. And finally, Isabel's boy, young George, played by Tim Holt, headstrong, impetuous, and arrogant heir to the splendor of the Andersons. Young George, who hated Eugene Morgan, the man his mother really loved, and stood between their happiness like an avenging angel.
Don't you think you should tell George?
About us?
Yes.
You're not wanted in this house, Mr. Morgan.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Perhaps you'll understand this.
So scandal at last attacked the House of Amberson. Scandal spread by Isabel's own sister. Scandal spread by her own son, who broke into every house in town to make them take back the things they said about his mother. That high and mighty Amberson girl who fell in love just once too often. Magnificent Ambersons brings you many of the Mercury players you first saw in Citizen Kane. It brings you Orson Welles as commentator, director, and producer of a truly distinguished and exciting motion picture.
A great classic comes to the screen.
Take thy hand, fair prince.
Who said I'm fair? To be or not to be? Not to be.
Columbia Pictures is proud to present the screen's greatest action hero, Jack Slater.
Slater!
Don't even think of Slater, you hear me?
This is the Lieutenant Governor.
Slater, here's what I...
The Governor gets here, call me.
And Danny Madigan is his biggest fan.
Jack Slater 4.
But tonight, a magic ticket...
It's a passport to another world.
...will get Danny closer to the action... ...than anyone ever dreamed.
Holy cow! I'm in the movie!
Who the hell are you?
Don't shoot me. I'm Danny Madigan. I'm a kid.
And you're going with him.
Who is this twerp? And where is that smile on his face?
I don't even know this kid.
To a world that's bigger than life.
This ticket is magic, and it really works.
And better than real.
You really believe that you're inside a movie, don't you?
Yes! The bad guys are in there.
I've seen it on screen.
Could I speak to the drug dealer of the house, please?
Have a nice day.
Have him killed.
This summer, it's head-on thrills.
I have killed people smarter and younger than you.
Head-first excitement.
I hate when it happens.
He's got the ticket!
Now I possess power. Real power.
He's gone over to my world!
In this world, the bad guys can win!
The door must still be open. Come on!
If I go, how do I get back?
And it's coming at you from both sides of the screen.
Where am I now?
This isn't the movies anymore, Jack. Please be careful. Things were different here.
Damn it, that hurt. Arnold Schwarzenegger is Jack Slater.
No!
This hero stuff has its limits.
And Jack Slater is...
Everybody down! Now!
The last action hero. The big ticket for 93.
I'll be back. Ha! You did not gonna say that, did you?
That's what you always say.
I do?
That's a preview for next week's show. Be sure to tune in. We'll be joined by the guys from The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema talking about one of Justin's favorite films and one of my least favorite, The Last Action Hero. Sparks will fly! Final thoughts about Dirktown Strutters. Like I said, you won't really see anything like it. It's one of those films that I know this is illegal to say, but I do make copies of it and send it out to friends. You know, it's one of those, like, you really need to experience this movie kind of thing.
Right, and it's also very accessible. You can do a basic Google search. You can find it for free to watch it streaming on like StageVoo. So I mean, it's out there. It's not hard to find.
It's weird though. There's an edited version of it out there. Like the line that I gave at the very top of the show about any similarities between this and the story of Cinderella are bullshit. If it doesn't say bullshit at the very beginning of the film, you're watching the censored version. So I picked this up on eBay years ago, thinking maybe it was a better transfer. Noticed that it was cut right away, noticed that that line was gone, and then throughout the movie there were different parts where it just seemed like things were missing. So just be careful of that one. That's all the time we have for this week. If you enjoyed the show, or even if you didn't, please spread the word. Let your friends and neighbors know about the projection booth. And by neighbors, I mean your actual physical neighbors. Go over and knock on the door and let them know, you know, bring over your iPhone or whatever you have and just set it up and let them listen to the show for an hour. That won't be awkward or anything.
Also, let your rabbi know to listen. It's very important. We need as many rabbis listening.
Get to know your rabbi.
Or get to know your ribeye. It's my favorite philosophy. Anyway, so, you know, check out the show's official site at projection-booth.com. Also, you can grab the show on iTunes and, you know, leave us some sort of rating and some feedback if you do.
So we're going to leave this week with the dramatic song, What You See Is What You Get.
And you know some people are made of wood. Some people have hearts of stone.
Some people are to no good.
But baby, I'm for real. I'm as real as a real can get. If what you're looking for is real loving, then what you see is what you get. Ha! What you see,
what you see
is what you get.
It's what you get.
What you see,
what you see
is what you get.
It's what you get.
Look at me. What you see?
What you see?
It's what you get.
It's what you get.
Mr. Interlocutor.
Yes, Mr. Bone.
Little Rasta said his first half word today.
His first half word, you say?
No, he said, just listen.
I am listening. What was his first half word?
Mother.